Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And if you want to hear the extended version of this episode, please join the Patreon campaign. This week, I'm talking to Nancy Dannison about her book, 33 Souls Who Met God, accounts of atheists, Buddhists, and Christians who died and met the same God. In 1994, during a pre-surgical medical procedure, Nancy underwent a profound and extended deep afterlife experience. That experience radically transformed her understanding of consciousness, death, and the nature of human existence. Hi, Nancy. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Oh, it's my great pleasure, Simon. I'm really excited to talk with you.
We're going to talk about your book. It's called 33 Souls Who Met God, accounts of atheists, Buddhists, and Christians who died and met the same God. So why is it called 33 Souls?
Because there are 33 people in my research group that who had the experience of actually meeting and integrating back into the source of creation.
And so this is what you call an expanded afterlife experience.
Yes, they are all expanded afterlife experiencers like me.
So how does the expanded afterlife experience, how is it different to, say, what you might call a normal NDE?
Well, if you could ever call it an NDE normal,
no.
I guess one of the scientific criteria that has always been in place among medical researchers is that the soul reaches a barrier or a boundary or a being that tells them they have to go back, or they reach a decision point where either, you know, a loved one might say it's not your time, or a being of light will say, you know, it's not your time, you know, you've got to go back. And those souls do not get to the point where they actually meet the source. Now, you have to realize, well, you don't have to realize, but I want you to realize that the source phenomenon that the 33 souls encountered is not a being. So it's not, you know, somebody you can step up to and meet them and you know, they're a discrete entity, a discrete person, a discrete being. The source phenomenon is an energy, a power, a force. One of my experiencers calls it a force field of love. So the closest analogy I can think of is like our sun, you know, the Earth sun, that has a core, a gaseous core, not entity. I guess it has a gaseous core thing to it. And then it has gases going off of it. And, you know, we call some of those solar flares. And then it has sunlight that gets all the way to Earth and to us. That's similar to what happens with near-death and afterlife experiences. Some souls never get to the afterlife at all. Most don't get to the afterlife at all. The ones that I call threshold, or you're calling a normal NDE, get to the point where they're, let's say, in the sun's corona. They're in the gaseous outer layers, the parts that we call solar flares. The expanded afterlife experiencers get right into the core. So they're right in the middle of the sun, and they're right in the middle of a source. And that's the big difference. It's the difference between being stopped before you get to the core of source and actually getting to the core of source.
So can we talk about your near-death experience?
I've had six.
Wow. Could you tell us about one of them? Is there one of them that is particularly impactful?
I'll give you an overview of the six, because they were all interesting. Yes, every single one of them is interesting. I mean, I just love reading about and hearing about NDEs. The first one, the big one, where I got 95% of the information that I share in my books and podcasts and on my YouTube channel and videos and yada, yada, yada. That occurred March 14th, 1994. I was in the hospital for breast cancer surgery. And ladies, there's not always a lump. So don't wait until you feel a lump before you think to go to get a mammogram. I was lucky enough that my oncological surgeon, who I had newly acquired as a result of this experience, recognized a strange pattern of calcifications, and they were suspicious, and that was why I was scheduled for the surgery. Because there was no lump, there wasn't anything to feel to know where to cut. So what oncological surgeons do is they have a radiologist perform what's called a needle localization procedure. The radiologist uses a mammogram to guide the placement of a large bore needle into where the calcifications are. And I had three sets of them. So the radiologist was having trouble getting the needle in the right place. So the procedure, which would normally take like 10 or 15 minutes, took an hour and a half. I had to go through the whole thing twice. And as a result of the local anesthetics, the low blood sugar, and the fact that they triggered a fatal arrhythmia, I died in the mammography room. I had and that's when I went into the afterlife and learned all these amazing things and had these amazing adventures. About at the end of my first afterlife experience, the big one, I either was given or I accepted or both a mission to tell everyone that I, who would listen, what I had experienced and what I'd learned in the afterlife. So 3 months, about 3 months later, and I hadn't done anything on my mission, I got called back to the afterlife and I met with a council of light beings who basically told me, hey, you said you would do this mission and you're not doing anything, get with the program. So those were my first two, and they were close together. And then my second two, well, I had another afterlife visit, a death experience where I went into the afterlife and I was told that the body was dead or dying and I had to make a choice. I had not fulfilled my mission, but they wouldn't hold that against me. And I could choose to stay home in heaven or the afterlife, whatever you want to call it, or I could go back to Nancy's body. If I went back, I would be able to see all the things that I had foreseen in the future during my first afterlife experience. But she and I together would suffer for the rest of her natural life. And I chose to come back for a lot of reasons. One was I didn't want to fail. I did not want to be the soul that, you know, looked source in the energetic essence and said, I couldn't do it. I also wanted to know what was going to happen in the future. I wanted to see the events play out, to see if they actually did play out the way I had seen the future was in the afterlife. And I was just curious about, you know, how Nancy's life was going to play out. I knew I could change it because I had been doing that all along through the power of manifesting. And Simon, to tell you the truth, you know, those seemed like good reasons at the time. But the biggest one was I wanted to tell everybody what I understand to be the truth about our existence and about Source. And I felt like I owed everybody else on Earth who would listen that information, those truths, because I thought it would comfort them. So then I had three, later on, I had three classic near-death experiences where I got out of body either during surgery or as a result of the body dying for another reason. And I just kind of like looked around the hospital. And those were all verified by the physicians who were treating me at the time. I've also had a shared death experience with my mother that some people call NDEs. I do not call what I experienced with her an NDE. And I've had what I call pop-ins to the afterlife. For example, one was while I was writing the book Backwards Beliefs, Revealing Eternal Truth, Hidden in Religions, I was like transported back to the afterlife. And I got this huge download of knowings of everything that had ever been written by any human, anywhere, at any time. And I mean, I'm including in that great manuscripts and plays and also post-it notes that people stick to the refrigerator and kids' homework. I mean, I saw it all, every single bit of it, and highlighted it literally in gold throughout all these various pieces of written material was the theme, we are all one. And the only part of that download of knowings that I can remember is that there's a Nickelback song that has one sentence in it that is basically, we are all one. I just got to tell you this because it's funny. While I was in the afterlife and I saw Earth's, past and present and future, I was told and shown that Source has sent us, millions of messengers. And they're not religious people. They're not gurus. They're not kings or, the kinds of people that humans tend to worship. They're just regular old people. And one of those regular people was Gene Roddenberry, who created the Star Trek series for TV. And I was just so thrilled to see that.
Yeah, that whole thing of the Federation and how everybody works together, and it's very inclusive, and it's all for the, what do they say? The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
That's Mr. Spock saying that.
You said you wanted to come back and tell people about all this stuff. And that kind of reminded me in a way of kind of like a religious preacher who wants to spread the good news of the Bible. Does that make sense to you?
Well, people kind of accuse me of being preachy, so I guess it's spot on.
Could you tell us what happened with the shared death experience?
My mother was in hospice dying. She had signed a do not resuscitate directive. And so they were just keeping her comfortable. She was getting a lot of hospitals, in fact, probably most of them in the U.S., give you morphine to keep you somewhat pain-free when you're dying. It's not really that effective. But one thing it does is it bursts the blood vessels in your eyes. So I could see from how many broken blood vessels she had in her eyes that she was getting closer and closer to death. So I was holding her hand toward the end, and I could see what she could see. I saw her pop out of the body. No, first of all, I saw her going in, dying and going into this dark void that, some NDEers describe, and she couldn't find the light. And she knew she was supposed to look for the light because she had had an NDE before and we'd discussed mine. So she knew where she was going, and she was looking for the light, and she couldn't find it, and she panicked. And so she popped out of body and started flying around the hospital room. And she stopped kind of briefly in front of the priest who was there and then just kept going. And the priest looked at me and he said, she's out. And I said, yes, I know. And then she went back into the body. And then we started the process again. She started through the darkness and she's looking for the light. And then I decided maybe if I let go of her hand, she'll go, she'll find the light. And I, you know, I felt like I was kind of like an anchor holding her back. So she did that time, and she did complete the process and pass on into the afterlife.
So do you feel the priest saw her?
Oh, yeah. And he told me later, he said that he's seen that before. It's not an unusual event for him to watch a soul flying around the room.
Well, one thing I read about your experience, you say near the end of 1994, that experience, you relived the creation of the universe in three different ways.
Creation of the universe, I saw from while I was inside what we would call, or what I'm referring to as those gaseous outer layers of source, you know, the coronal ejections, if as it were. So I was at that part of source, not yet completely to the core. And I guess I do remember now what you're talking about, three different ways. I remembered creating the universe from my own memories. I watched it as Nancy, as kind of an observer. And then I also got these knowings that came into my mind to explain various things as they were occurring. So I watched Source have the desire to feel what it was like not to just be itself, to feel what it was like to relate to others, to feel emotions that it did not possess personally, but could imagine. So it decided to create this, what we call the universe, within its mind. So it's a little bit similar to how we create a dream in our minds when we're dreaming. And it manifested all of the energy, all of the everything that was required to evolve into a universe. It did not create the universe per se. It just expanded and expelled this huge bolus of the most similar thing is thought energy. And it imposed what we call the laws of nature to guide how that energy would evolve. So it created, you know, the laws of physics and the laws of biology and, you know, gravity and molecular cohesion and the laws of chemistry and all that. And then the energy just followed those laws and evolved into planets and stars and outer space and everything that eventually evolved on every one of the planets and stars, and just let it go to see, you know, how it was going to evolve. Then, and that took millions and millions of years of Earth years. Then it also created mental characters or personalities within its own mind, kind of the way a novelist creates book characters, you know, to write about in his or her books. So Source created these various personalities, each of which is unique, invested each personality with its own consciousness and self-awareness, and then created the system where each one of those personalities could invest part of its consciousness and personality and energy into physical matter. So that was creating the incarnation phenomenon. And then each one of those personalities can incarnate and does incarnate all over the universe and all kinds of different things.
Was there a time where you were shown Earth's creation and its future?
Yes. As part of that process, I saw, you know, Earth being created. But then I separately watched Earth's creation from somewhere just outside our solar system. Like, I could see all the planets in our solar system, some of which haven't been discovered yet, or they hadn't been discovered as of 1994. Some of them have now been discovered. And I also saw a bunch of gas giants that, you know, science hadn't discovered yet. But I watched Earth coalesce from space debris, you know, dust and minerals and chemicals and, you know, all kinds of things. And I watched every stage of Earth's creation and development through its eventual destruction. And all I can remember about the destruction is I said to myself, oh, it goes the same way Mars did. Because I had watched Mars, which used to be a living, verdant, full of life planet, get wiped out. And I don't remember what caused that, but that's what's going to happen to Earth, according to what I saw in this history and future of the planet Earth.
And is there a better future for mankind? Is there going to be a great awakening?
What I saw was the history of Earth in three epochs. The first epoch was the one that had the dinosaurs in it. You know, that was when Earth was first terraformed. I got the word terraformed from Star Trek. And that epoch was eventually destroyed. The common theory is the comet hit. That's not what happened. But the Earth re-terraformed. Continents drifted apart, oceans formed, you know, the axis tilted, the amount of tilt of the Earth changed. It was a lot of geophysical changes that caused the death of the dinosaurs and the destruction of that early first iteration of Earth and humans. There were humans alive at that time. And they were all wiped out. So the second epoch is what's going on now. The human species started over and is different than the species that was killed off with the dinosaurs. We are that species. And then there will be a third epoch. And I think that might be what you're talking about, the Great Awakening. But what I saw was that as a result of a long transition period, and we are in that transition period now, a lot of humans would die off. You know, they would die from famine and floods and tsunamis and volcanic eruptions and diseases that mutated from, you know, something fairly harmless into something fatal, diseases that jumped from animals to man, wars. I did not see any wars, but clearly there are some going on. And as a result of all these various ways of killing humans, the planet would be greatly reduced in human population. And that human population would have to find different ways of living. You know, the financial institutions were destroyed. Most governments were destroyed. It's basically back to it. Not exactly It wasn't exactly like anything that's occurred in history to date. But it would be a time when, because there were far fewer people, they would have to cooperate much more to be able to get along and to be able to maintain essential services, because there were no governments around to do it for them. So the people who were left on Earth chose that. We were each at the end of the transition, whoever was left on Earth was given the option they could come back to the afterlife through one of these various ways of dying and help those still on earth by using their stronger spiritual powers when they're in the afterlife. Or they could stay on earth and help by helping, you know, the people that were left reorganize and you know, come out the other side stronger and better. So maybe that's the Great Awakening. It's not so much that humans as a species evolve or transition into anything. They're just animals. They're never going to transition to anything. They're just animals. But the souls within humans made the choice to stay and to get along with everybody else and to recreate, you know, society and culture. And it's because of the nature of those souls that it's a calmer, more peaceful, more productive earth.
But do you find that these 33 people in your book, were some of them religious then? And after their experience, did they abandon that religion?
They all had some type of religion, except the few who said they were agnostic or atheist. There were like one Hindu, one Buddhist, one Taoist. Those people, after going through, you know, meeting Source and merging into it and learning the origin of the universe and learning the origin of souls and knowing that we are literally mental characters in Source's mind, and then we awaken when we get back to Source, we awaken to the knowledge that we are Source and we have all of the knowledge of all of Source, including the knowledge that we had as our, you know, little tiny character. All of them, except the Buddhist, Taoist, and Hindu believer, came back from that experience with a different religion, or no religion at all. They consider themselves spiritual.
Did you get knowledge on life on other planets? Did you see past lives of your own on other planets?
I did not receive any knowings about other planets. And that's one of the things, Simon, that has fascinated me about this research, is I have not yet encountered anyone who received intellectual knowledge about other planets. Like, for example, you know, I haven't encountered anyone who learned how, you know, scientific principles from another planet, or learned how space travel works if it does exist on another planet, or learned the biology of other species. I do know of one or more NDEers who have visited other planets and, you know, can report back what they saw. But I don't know anyone who got actual knowings about them. I didn't. I did relive all of my other physical lifetimes throughout the universe. While my life review was going on, I just remember pieces and parts of that, because the way it was presented to me at that time was not like life events, like chronologically, like a movie, but experiences. Like, for example, I relived and reviewed all of the skies I'd ever seen. Yeah, I could remember, you know, what the sky looked like when I was laying out in the sun. I could remember the sky looked like while I was, you know, on graduation day. I could remember the sky looked like each time I flew my little airplane. And what I remembered about my life review was like kind of that nature. It was the collection of sensory data. And in my mind, I'm saying, you know, been there, done that. What I got at the same time was an opening into all the other lives I had lived throughout the universe. And they were just much more interesting. I didn't pay any more attention to Nancy's life review. And I just focused on those. And I relived hundreds and hundreds, or maybe even thousands, of other lifetimes as all kinds of creatures and things all over the universe, on planets, not on planets. Like the one lifetime I remember that fascinated me the most was living as a nebula. And, you know, a nebula is just like a cloud of gases. But I lived as a nebula, and I can remember feeling what it was like to have myself scattered among little particles or little of gases, you know, covering this wide area in what we call outer space. And it all felt connected to me, but it also felt disconnected. And I can remember watching the incredibly beautiful colors of the universe. And I remember some other lifetimes from that, too. I do not remember any other human lifetimes, although I know I had them. And I did not remember anything useful from another planet. You know, like I couldn't come back and build a spaceship that will actually make it to Mars. You know, I couldn't come back and cure cancer. But I did have lifetimes on other planets and on stars and, you know, all kinds of things. And some of the other 33 souls did too.
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression therapy sessions over Zoom, and these sessions can be very insightful and healing. If you go to my website, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, you can book a free 20-minute consultation where we can discuss what it is you would like to achieve. You'll find the link to my website in the show notes. So it seems to me that you get this incredible knowledge, or as you call them, knowings, but when you come back, you can't bring them with you?
That seems to be the case. I have heard from other NDEers, you know, who are friends and, you know, people that I know, say that many of them are given a gift. You know, and I don't know if it's a consolation prize or what, but, you know, like one of my friends was cured of cancer. It ultimately came back, but at the time he was cured of cancer. And others will talk about, you know, being more psychic, or maybe they're able to see the energy and things, or, you know, all kinds of different gifts. I think my gift was memory. I went into the afterlife with an attitude of, you know, show me the money. You know, I wanted the proof. You know, I wanted to see what was going on. And when, you know, when it wasn't like what I expected, I wanted to know why. And, you know, I have been an attorney for 49 years. I think I was an attorney before I was born. I think that's just my personality type. And so I was in the afterlife with that same kind of a prove it to me attitude. And I think that's partly why I would have been able to remember. And also part of why I've been able to remember so much is, you know, I was given a warning that, well, actually, I wasn't given any warning. I was presented with this mission. And then the next thing I know, I didn't decide to come back into Nancy. I just started doing it. You know, I was going through this whirlwind, you know, like a tornado back into Nancy's body. And the whole time that was happening, I knew it was happening. In my light being friends, I had five dearly beloved eternal friends in the afterlife that were with me at various points in times. And they were surrounding me as I was whirlwinding. That's not a word, but you know what I mean. Going back into Nancy's body. And they kept saying, love is all that matters. Love is all that truly matters. And I kept saying, shut up. I'm trying to memorize the stuff. I was trying to memorize as much as I could of what I had learned. And I could feel, like as I got closer to Nancy's body, I could feel it slipping away. Just, you know, tons and tons and tons of information just slipping away. And when I got back into Nancy's body, it was cold and wet and heavy and thick and gross. And more of the knowings just couldn't make it through that density. So I just, it's a miracle that I've been able to remember as much as I have. And like I said before, some things I remember a lot about, even though it's maybe 0.00000001% of the total volume of knowledge. And there are other things I don't remember anything at all about, or I might remember like one or two sentences.
So this knowing is like an instant transfer of knowledge. So like if you got a knowing of how to play the guitar, is it that you don't just get the theory of it all, you get this knowledge or this feeling that you've played the guitar for years and that you know how it feels and how to do it?
Yes. Knowings are instantaneous deposits of everything that Source knows on a particular topic. And those knowings come from our experiences. You know, when we return to Source, we upload all of our experiences, all of which are personal. You know, we live them firsthand. And that is all combined in this huge database in Source's mind that I call universal knowledge. And while we are in the afterlife, we can tap into that either intentionally or we just get downloads of knowings for, you know, whatever reason. But it is flavored with that personal experience aspect.
And did you learn there is no heaven or hell?
I learned there is no hell. But I think we can pretty confidently say there's heaven. It's not an earth-like heaven. It's not the paradise of the Muslim religion. It's not anything even remotely like human life, but it's definitely there. And that's what I think most NDEers call the afterlife. Eternal life. It's eternal life is what it is.
And another thing in the book, you say that people who have expanded afterlife experiences move beyond the human, so you don't see any physical scenery or environments that would be human.
Yes. That was one of the things they had in common was, I think, without exception, just among the threshold afterlife experiences that I have seen or heard or read about or had somebody tell me, they always have some aspect of physical scenery or physical life. It might be hearing music. It might be seeing a beautiful garden or, you know, a crystal city or seeing loved ones, you know, in human bodies. One of the strange features of all the expanded afterlife experiences that I did not expect was that none of them saw any physical scenery. There was no group of human beloved, you know, friends and neighbors and family members meeting them and greeting them. I don't know why that is. My guess, and it's purely a guess, is that because about half of them were familiar with the afterlife as they were going through it. I recognized each step as it was happening. I couldn't predict what was coming next, but it was familiar. And a lot of them said it was familiar to them. So maybe they weren't scared. Maybe they didn't need the comforts of these physical manifestations. Maybe they were just so familiar with the process that it was easier for them. I think there was at least one of the 33 who kind of adamantly refused to go back into his body after he had, you know, merged with Source. And he was shown a human being sitting at a little cafe table And he sat down at this little cafe table and talked with this human being who was trying to convince him to come back into the body. That's the only Earth-like scenery that I can recall that any of them saw. And that was like way later in the process.
So it's that thing of leaving your human identity behind in a way, as just kind of physically and environmentally. The people who have near-death experiences who go into human environments, it's like almost like when you die, you're getting a soft landing, you're getting something you can relate to, so you don't just have a complete different experience that's nothing like human.
I would say that we do not leave our human identity behind. And I'm basing that on the fact that of those whose, you know, NDEs I've heard about or read about or whatever, they still think and have the same feelings and the same personality out of body that they do in the body. And that's, you know, I think it's very clear. I don't know how anybody who knows anything about NDEs could ever question that consciousness survives death. You know, I mean, I think it just has to be a complete unawareness of this entire body of knowledge for anybody to have any kind of fear that they're going to disappear when they die. But those of us who have mentioned anything about it say they have no body, of course, but their personality is the same. You know, that's one of the things I found interesting when I was in the afterlife. I was saying to myself, I'm still me. Still got the same weird sense of humor. Still got, you know, our personalities are eternal. They're created within Source. They exist forever. And no matter what we're incarnated into, we have the same personality. We may not be able to express it the same way because of the limitations of the body. Like if you incarnate into a rock, you're not going to be able to sing. Whereas if you incarnate into a human, you might be able to sing. And that's one of the things that you enjoy. That's part of your eternal personality. But my experience and those of all the others I've read about who have been in the afterlife, they still think and feel and have the same emotions they did as a human, maybe greatly expanded. And when I say that the 33, you know, got past human thinking, it's really, I don't really have a good way to express that. What I mean is that they weren't bound up by human beliefs. They weren't held down by the belief that they're human. They knew. They absolutely knew they were part of Source. No doubt about it. They weren't trapped into religious thinking that, you know, they were going to meet this or that or the other religious icon in the afterlife, or that they were going to enter a paradise or live in a beautiful mansion on Golden Street. You know, they weren't held down by human beliefs. But, you know, when I was telling you about watching creation, I was, even at that late stage, right before I merged into Source, I could still watch what was going on as Nancy. And I still thought as Nancy, even as at the same time, I had the memories of doing it myself. And I would also like to add that, you know, it's incredibly difficult to explain what it's like to go back into Source. You know, there have been times when I've said that right before I disappeared into Source, and I should not have used that word disappeared. We do not at any time ever disappear. Once Source creates our eternal personality, it's part of Source's mind, part of its selfness. And when we go back to Source, when we reintegrate into Source, we add to that all of the rest of Source. We don't lose it at all. And the closest I can come to a human analogy is, you know, we all have our dream character self. I've never had a dream that I wasn't in, but, you know, we have this dream character self that's basically the same character as we are during the day. When we wake up, that dream character self doesn't disappear. It's still in there. It's still in our mind. And the next time we go to sleep and when next time we dream, our dream character self is right back there. And that's the way it is with Source. You know, we can reintegrate or merge into the core entity of Source and come back out anytime we want. That's what we do when we reincarnate. So nothing is ever lost. There's only a huge, 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 huge gain of information and of other personalities and of all Source. And being aware that we are literally Source and that we actually have all these experiences and we have all this knowledge. And it's just not something you can imagine as a human.
So with reincarnation, would it be Nancy that reincarnates, or would it be some other part of your soul that incarnates and Nancy stays with Source?
Okay, let me go back for a second to answer your soft landing question. My understanding from a download that I got while I was in the afterlife the first time is that Source designed the incarnation and reincarnation and crossing over, you know, leaving incarnations process to give us a soft landing. It was created with love and understanding and compassion such that each soul, when it leaves an incarnation, goes through this process, you know, getting out of body and then crossing over and then going into the afterlife and then going through the life review and then going further into the afterlife and eventually returning to unification with the Source. And that's all extremely personal. It's unique for every soul. And it's designed to give each soul what it needs in order to comfort them. Because you got to admit, dying is traumatic. No matter whether you are aware you were dying or not. I was not. But it is a very traumatic event to be ripped out of the body and the life that you've known, you think, forever, and the only life you've ever had, and then going back into the afterlife and resuming your own spiritual existence can be traumatic. So everything is designed to cushion that blow. And that's why some souls, threshold afterlife experiences, will see physical manifestations. They're there to comfort them. And that's why they hear beautiful music or, you know, gurgling streams or, you know, whatever. Those are there specifically for that particular soul to comfort them. So yes, the process is designed to give us each individually what we expect and what we need to most easily make the transition back to spiritual and eternal life. Okay, then is Nancy the one that reincarnates? Our personality is eternal. Nancy is an animal that I am currently incarnated into. Humans are animals. Nothing more, nothing less. It's the soul that actually gives the animal the personality that people think belongs to the animal. It's like when we talk about humanity, we're really talking about soul traits, soul character traits. So animals, the human animals, do have character traits and personality traits, you know, like you can see them in your dog or a horse, but they're minimal and they're shared pretty much uniformly through the species. So Nancy is just this body and what I learned while in this body will live forever within me as the soul, even though the body is gone. When I reincarnate, it will be my eternal personality that includes all the memories of all these hundreds of thousands of lifetimes that I've lived, plus Nancy's experiences. Now, will I be able to remember any of that when I incarnate into something else? Probably not. But it's all there. And that's what incarnates, is the eternal personality within Source's mind, the eternal part of Source's own consciousness and self-awareness that incarnates each time. And it will have nothing in common with Nancy.
Gets so complicated, doesn't it, and confusing.
Well, you know, I guess it does sound that way. But when I was in the afterlife, I thought human religions are complicated and confusing. You know, once you're steeped in this knowledge and you're in the afterlife, it just seems so logical and easy and sweet.
So you have a chapter 13 that's titled Living Other Souls' Lives Vicariously. Is that somebody's lived another life, but then as a soul, you get to experience the entirety of the life they lived?
I don't know if it's the entirety, but it is definitely scenes from, like, my own experience. After I watched the history of Earth and before I got to the layer of the corona where I was watching the creation of the universe, in between there, my light being friends, my five light being friends, told me that I had to relearn how to merge my energy into others before I could go forward and merge back into Source. And we spent a lot of time with them teaching me how to put my whole self into one of them. And then while I was in them, I relived scenes from various lifetimes that they had lived. I'd never shared a lifetime with any of them. And it took, I finally learned how to do it with one, and then I had to learn how to do it with two. And because Source is a collective entity, it includes all souls that have ever been created and have ever lived anywhere in the universe. And in order to blend into them, you know, apparently it takes some adjusting. And they were not confident in my being able to adjust without them retraining me. Now, some of the other 33 souls did it, you know, without any kind of help from the outside. They, you know, after I read these other 32 accounts of expanded afterlife experiences, I thought, man, I must have been like the densest soul ever to hit the after. So anyway, I retrained on how to blend into these others, and I did live scenes from their lifetimes. The others, there were only a few others who did this, you know, vicarious living. And I think they just got scenes too. I'm not certain about that.
Well, it's been great talking to you. The book's called 33 Souls Who Met God, Accounts of Atheists, Buddhists, and Christians Who Died and Met the Same God. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yes.
And can you tell us about your other books?
When I first got back to to Nancy's body, it was really tough adjustment. And I've had long, like year-long stretches of illness since then. So during one of those year-long stretches of illness, I started waking up every morning at 4:30 with memories from being in the afterlife. And I wrote about 1,000 pages over the course of that year. And I realized nobody was going to publish a 1,000-page book. So I broke it down. I extracted like the 40,000 foot view of everything, you know, an overview of everything, and put it in my first book called Backwards, Returning to Our Source for Answers. And that has an overview of my the events that I experienced in the afterlife, as well as the knowings. And then what was when I found out I was going to be able to get a second book published, I put the rest of what was in the first book into the second book in the form of questions and answers, because I, after publication of the first book, I got a lot of questions and I thought they were good ones. So I put the questions and answers in Backwards Guidebook. And then the third book, Backwards Beliefs, Revealing Eternal Truths Hidden in Religions, is the entirety of what I remember of that earth history and the development of religion, you know, and, you know, the creation and how souls were created and, you know, how religions developed and what it's going to be like in the future. After I wrote those three books, I got tons and tons of questions and I started answering them in a monthly newsletter. So in, I don't know, 2017, maybe somewhere around in there, I compiled those newsletters into a book called Answers from the Afterlife. So it's question and answer format again. And then by maybe, I don't know what year it came out, but I had all along been asking my readers for examples of things they had manifested, you know, their manifesting stories. I finally got enough of those that I could write a book called Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory, which contains everything that I remember about manifesting as it was taught to me three different ways in the afterlife. And it includes a chapter in there of manifesting stories that my readers gave me to show you examples of the kinds of things you can manifest and how manifesting works. So that book, Create a New Reality, is really the recipe for creating literal physical matter. And then, of course, 33 Souls Who Met God was the result of 32 years of trying to find others like me.
Well, it's a fascinating book, and it's been great talking to you. And thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you, Simon. I've really enjoyed what little bit I get to know about you. And I wish you the best of all luck and skill with your podcast.
This week, I was talking to Nancy Dannison about her book, 33 Souls Who Met God, accounts of atheists, Buddhists, and Christians who died and met the same God. If you want to hear the rest of this interview, you can sign up to Patreon. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And my book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, is out on Amazon. You can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. It's sold over 2,000 copies and has had more than 50 five-star reviews. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.